Welcome back to another episode of the Photographer Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Macy, and in this series, we explore the winning mindsets, attitudes, and strategies implemented by successful and inspirational photographers in the Instagram community so that we can start maybe implementing some of their ideas and things that are working for them into our own practice. So if this is not your first time listening to the show and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, it would be awesome if you could drop a rating and a review, help the show rank better and spread to more people so that more people can have access to something that may benefit them. So let's hop into it, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
This one of the reasons why I have such a love-hate relationship with social media, as it is a game and it's tough to play.
Yeah, it is tough to play. I agree.
You have to really be, you have to be on it. You know, if one day you're feeling like shit and you don't want to post something, well, all of a sudden now there's people that are, I don't know, I guess like, it's just, it's the game. It's like a tough game to play. And if you don't have, there's no consistency with it. If you don't, you know, quote unquote, post high quality content, all of a sudden you're seen in a different light, in a different way, right, by a ton of people. And right, there's people that like you're friends with, like that you could be your parents or, you know, just family friends you grew up with, where like anytime you post, they're going to like your content. They're going to understand this no person is someone I like, yeah, and they like, you know, they're going to like it and they're going to engage with it. But then you're also trying to reach people that you've never met before. And so if all of a sudden you post a couple of really great photos and then you start posting photos that are maybe something you really like or are passionate about, but they're not quote unquote like really good photos technically or otherwise, then all of a sudden you are like, you have a shadow underneath you where it's like, oh, I don't know, I guess I like them for this one photo, but now I don't want to watch, I don't want to see what they do anymore because I'm not into it. And then, right, then you have to balance that out between like, okay, liking and posting, I guess, for lack of a better word, what you are passionate about, and then what gets engagement or gets likes, I think is it's a really nasty game to play. And it's a push and
pull on your psyche. And then, you know what I relate it to really is when your favorite band is chugging along, right? And you're like, oh, these guys kick ass, they kick ass. And then that new album comes out.
Yep.
And you're like, it's a 180, right? Because to relate this to what you've just said, the artist has a new, you know, passion, or they want to go down a different avenue with their art. Photography is art, right?
Yep.
And they get ridiculed for it. And
I mean, eviscerated even. Like I'm a big music person, and you know, there have been so many moments where, you know, a band quote unquote sells out, or they change their genre a little bit, and all of a sudden every fan that they've ever had just wants to be, you know, a critic of what they're doing. And I feel that very similarly to photography. And I don't necessarily feel it in my day to day, but I see it. And like, that makes me not necessarily love it all the time.
Well, I mean, and I've seen really talented people bow out of Instagram. Like we just refer to it as a game. It is a giant game, and there are rules to this game if you're going to win and if you're going to succeed. And sometimes the rules suck. And not only that, the rules change with every algorithm update. And I don't think people can keep up. And I think it's really vicious. And I've been preaching this on this show a lot. What are we all doing this for? And there really needs to be a balance between beating yourself up over it. And like, if Instagram is becoming the root of your anxiety and your self-worth, just get off.
Right. And that's a very valid point. Like, you know, I like putting photos on Instagram, on social media to get that, you know, to get those likes and to get some sort of validation. But, you know, the real idea behind why I take photos is not to post on Instagram.
Right.
You know, I was doing this art. I was creating this art, whether it was photos or I used to shoot a lot of video back kind of before Instagram was as popular as it was,
right,
you know, like 2010, 2011, I was like really into, action sports videography. And so there was no social media beyond, you know, Facebook and Twitter back then. You know, Instagram, if it was there, it was pretty much nothing. And so I definitely don't post I don't take photos just to post on Instagram, but it certainly is part of the game that we all have to play. Right. So,
right.
If I don't post on Instagram and I don't play the game of social media, it's hard to advance in that career path.
Right, especially if that's your goal. If your goal is to, I don't know, make a living selling prints or shooting for tourism boards or whatever that may be, like you have to play. You have to. Otherwise,
it's a requirement.
Otherwise, you got to go pick something else to make your income, and that's fine. You know, I've been toying with that idea as well. Like, I'll just go do something else and completely take the pressure off myself, and so I can get back to enjoying the game. That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, if you treat it as a game, you got to enjoy it. Personally, I do. But I know that if I ever stopped enjoying the game, I would quit and not feel bad about it. I think so many people feel bad about the Q word, quitting. But if you treat it as a sunk cost towards your mental health, you know, so what, right? Go do something that's going to give you enjoyment. I mean, if you hate the game, if you hate soccer, why would you continue to go play soccer? It's the stupidest thing.
It becomes asinine at that point. It doesn't make any sense to anybody.
But to make this positive, it is fun connecting with other people, and it is fun getting inspired, and it's fun getting criticism. Personally, I enjoy constructive feedback. I have a group of close network where I offer up the idea of please roast my photo, just because I think we're all striving for personal growth, whatever that is, as human beings in general, or as photographers, or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, like, we're doing this podcast over because of the wonders of social media. So that's one of the positives, right? And if you can use it to find mentors, you can use it to ask questions to people who are in positions that you want to get into, which is really neat. But let's get into more of some photography. You're an excellent landscape photographer. You're very similar to Morgan Tuohy, who's on the show. We were talking about that before we started recording, right?
Yeah.
And I think your love for landscape has to come from hiking, right? Because it's so easy to go to places, I was saying, like Lake Louise, or I don't know, pick your famous spot where billions of photos are taken there every year. And as creative people, we want to be different, right? We want to be original. I know I've said on this podcast that original ideas are ceasing to exist just because there's been so many people taking pictures. But I mean, you can go take a picture of that mountain range that very few people do, if you're looking to be an original artist. So I was wondering how you go about finding these nice places, these nice mountainscapes, and, you know, what commitment that involves.
It's a funny question, because again, through social media and through personal life, like, I've found a lot of, you know, connections with people through photography.
Yeah.
And there's a handful of people that, you know, they want to take a good photo. They want to make what you would call, like, a really nice, technically speaking, a great photo and a pretty place.
Like the fundamentals, but, like a good photo, sound.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the effort, like we were, you know, just as you kind of mentioned, the effort's not there. So they would rather drive to a place, park, maybe walk 5 minutes or so, take this beautiful photo, go back to their car, go on with their day. Uh-huh. For me, it involves a hell of a lot more than that. And that's where I pride myself on what I do. I don't consider myself like the best photographer ever. I don't think, technically speaking, I have like the best, I don't have the best gear. I don't have the best, you know, understanding of light and of distance, things like that. But where I find my strength is in the effort and the planning. So a little background on that is, I live in Colorado, the Denver
beautiful
area.
Place. I'm jealous.
definitely a pretty place, and has a lot of easy access to mountains. But what a lot of people don't know is that there are amazing hidden gems within, you know, within the same mountain ranges as something like Maroon Bells. Maroon Bells is in Aspen, Colorado, and it is the most photographed place in, I believe, the United States, if not North America.
Really?
It might be up there with Lake Louise. It's this very pretty place, but there's a parking lot and a wheelchair access to this lake.
Right.
And so for me, I try to find the places that people either don't know exist. And that's, you know, a lot of times, you know, as nerdy as this may sound, you know, I scour Google Earth.
Dude, that comes up all the time. So many people do that. you know, and like, sorry to interrupt you, but I'm a big fan on this show of finding the common denominators between inspirational photographers and people I look up to. And I started making notes of what the common denominators are. And that's one of the big ones. It's like, do your research. Like, research. Google Earth. Yep. Yeah. Like, well, Google Earth, right? And what looks cool from above, especially if you're doing drone stuff, right?
Exactly. And I know if you're mentioning drone stuff, I've just been getting into that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's just say I'm not the best drone pilot. I take a basic drone and I fly it to its absolute, like, I guess like the very short of it is I crash the drone. I crash drones.
Nice.
I'm on my third drone now. I've only been flying them
we'll
for like
3 or 4
months.
We'll get you a
t-shirt
that says that I crash drones in like Arial black font.
I mean, I would appreciate that there a lot. But you know, a lot of places around Colorado specifically are national forests or national parks. And you in Canada, you know, I know Canada has extremely stringent drone laws.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's born and raised Vancouver, who she now lives in California, but she just spent a huge chunk of time doing a drone project in Vancouver and up the Sea to Sky. And I mean, the amount of permits and kind of the red tape that she had to go through is insane. So for me, I don't necessarily take drone photography as like what I do. That's just sort of like a hobby on top of photography that I have.
Right.
But as far as like a lot of the hiking stuff, it really just comes down to how much effort are you willing to put in and how much kind of mental fortitude, for lack of a better word, are you willing to put in? Because
that's the best word, actually.
It's funny, two weekends ago, I went outside of Vail. There's this really cool mountain range called the Gore Range.
Okay.
It's really rugged and pretty hidden. But you know, most hikes are within 10 to 15 miles round trip with, you know, about 3,000 feet of elevation gain. So
damn,
long hikes. And I am a sunrise person. So a lot of what you see on either my Instagram or my website is a lot of sunrise photos. I find that to be kind of like my happy place. A mountain lake at sunrise is beyond words to me.
Unbeatable.
The best feeling ever.
Yeah.
And so 2 weekends ago, I went out to go hike this lake at sunrise. So that meant leaving my house at 1 a.m., driving an hour and a half to the trailhead, you know, on foot around 3:30 in the morning. Sunrise is about 6:30. And at 6:15, I realized I was still over an hour away from the lake. Just with like the terrain, the elevation, I was tired. I sat down and was just like, I failed, right? I'm done. I failed what I wanted to do. I wanted to get here at sunrise and I failed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go through the idea in my head of, you didn't fail. You just didn't get there for exactly what you want. But the mountains are your happy place. Mountains is where my therapy comes into play.
For sure.
So I sat there and I said, I could turn around now, be back in my car in, you know, an hour or two and go on with my day. Or I can push through and make it to the lake after sunrise. Who cares, right?
And just deal with the conditions. Yeah.
But also be happy. And I did that. I decided that it was better for me in the moment to not turn around, to just say, suck it up, and to just go for the actual end destination.
Right.
And, you know, while I was kind of hitting myself up over the head, right? Like, oh, I missed the sunrise. Like, I didn't get the photo I wanted. I still was able to enjoy the mountain lake and enjoy the solitude and actually like put a freaking huge smile on my face.
Right. And that's what it's all about, man. And the other thing too is I've been meaning to say this just because of what you've described is it's never, I've heard this saying somewhere, I can't remember where, but it's never crowded on the extra mile.
That's a phenomenal quote.
You know what I mean? Absolutely, it's never crowded on the extra mile because people just, generally speaking, don't want to do it, don't want to become self-reliant, don't want to improve their life, because in a weird way, if you think about it, people are addicted to pain and suffering in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
Like that your mind that chatters at you isn't really you. It's an evolutionary disaster in a way that we've kind of lost touch of. You know, like you said, it was amazing that you were able to turn it around and enjoy the mountains. I mean, other people would have just been like, fuck it. this is sucks. I blew it. I'm terrible. I'm no good. And, but yeah, man, it's never crowded on the extra mile. I just wanted to say that. And
I love that quote because that's, yeah. You know, and I think you can take that literally, but also, you know, that's how like your brain works too. Like The entire time I was hiking up that hike, you know, I'm in my head saying, well, I got to get here for sunrise, got to get here for sunrise. And it's my brain is talking internally. And so when that extra mile did happen, it was silent, right? It was not only silent in the actual
your
moment.
Your mind silent, right?
My brain turned off and was like, just put in the extra effort, hike that extra bit, and just enjoy the moment. And that's something that I really, really appreciated. And I surprised myself too, which was actually really nice.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not going to get too philosophical on this episode, but I mean, if everyone's chasing enlightenment, you know what I mean? That state of non-suffering and enjoyment, that's it. Like it's already inside you. It's not in sorry if this offends religious people. It's not in like a idol God or something like that. It's just in enjoying what you're doing at this exact moment and not having that internal dialogue, right?
Like absolutely.
A deer doesn't beat itself up for not getting to the river on time, or, you know, a cat doesn't feel depressed. It's just like every other animal or living sentient being other than humans seems to just be at peace with being. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. So, I mean,
when you're doing that walk and your mind goes silent, that is that equivalent. So that's just something I've personally been thinking about recently, just in every moment of my waking life, is being conscious of just the things in the space around me and how cool it is just that those things exist and I'm here. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that you're on that path going to the mountains is wicked cool.
Yeah. I mean, and it should just be as simple as that. But of course, it's not always as simple, and it doesn't need to be that simple all the time, but knowing that it is that simple and that you can just be in the forest, be in the wherever you are, just being somewhere is pretty damn special.
Right. And I mean, well, the other interesting thing is too, is why would a sane person choose to be unhappy in that moment? Do you know what I mean? If you, like, in all seriousness,
absolutely.
If you really break it down, why would you decide to be mad? Right? It doesn't really make sense.
It doesn't make sense at all.
But like, as soon as you're conscious of that idea, like you were in that moment, it kind of just dissolves, right?
Yep.
And I know that exact feeling you're talking about. You also mentioned your calendar though. I mentioned your calendar just now. I blew the surprise. You're mentioning morning light shots, which I think are really cool. And I think some of those shots are featured in your calendar. Sorry to spoil it, guys. Sorry. But I wanted to know, because it's something I'm interested in, is doing a calendar for, I think I missed the boat on 2021. I'm not really sure the creative direction I want to go, but you're selling one, which is really neat. For people who are listening and maybe interested in doing something like that themselves, how did you... I'm sure there's lots of places people can go to do it. Are you doing it yourself? Is there a service that can do something like this for you? Like, what are you doing?
So it's a really good question. You know, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I just had, you know, I think it was friends of my, you know, mom and dad who were just like, oh, I'd love to get a calendar of his photos. And I thought, you know, in this day and age, like, who really uses a calendar? The answer was actually a shitload of people. I basically over the last couple of years, I've sort of developed it, as far as the printing process, it's been a little bit different, but as far as the photo process, kind of figuring out, you know, what month feels like what. So, you know, maybe in January, it's kind of like a colder, you know, snowy landscape, and maybe in, April. So I do a little bit of like severe weather storm chasing. So maybe it's like a really crazy thunderstorm, because April, May, that's the time of it. And maybe in the, you know, October, it's like a beautiful fall color scene.
It seems so obvious. I never thought of that. I was just like gonna kind of go at random, but no, that makes a lot more sense.
This is for you, man. This is for you.
This is not for anybody listening. This is just for my benefit. So
But yeah, that's kind of how, like, I would say I choose the photo, so to speak. You know, I usually, I would say I have a pretty good internal dialogue of, you know, for say for 2020's calendar, I'm only going to use photos I took in 2020. For 2021 calendar, I'm only going to take, or obviously it's going to be the year previous, but
previous year, correct. Yeah.
I keep it very, kind of very strict. And that's obviously my own rules. That's nobody else's. But I know you mentioned something about like how, where do you get it printed? What do you do? So there are tons of places you can go and make your own calendar. Things like Snapfish, MPix, they're kind of like your basic, like photo printing websites.
Right.
But they're not necessarily the best quality, and you don't necessarily get to choose like the style of the calendar, how many pages, the layout, like the font, things like that.
You know what's always bothersome about that kind of stuff too is maybe this is just ego and I need to ditch this thought, but I hate the idea of, I know there's other people who are using this template and they're going to have the same calendar. And I hate that idea. It eats at me.
But that's, I don't think that's necessarily a wrong thought process, right. But it's certainly like, you know, you can get over that if you needed to.
I think I just did by being aware of it.
Hey, being self-aware, that's step one.
That's the goal. Anyway, sorry, continue.
So this year, I actually found a print shop. They're sort of like a, do it all print shop. They're based out of Montana. And they basically had a very kind of sort of plain template for calendars. But when you order them in bulk, you get sort of a good discount and a good price point for, you know, say 100 calendars. They have like a pretty intuitive website to upload the photos to, and they actually send you, you know, PDFs of what the proof looks like and all of that. Cool. So it's a little bit more in depth than just like dropping a photo and just being like, okay, hopefully it comes out okay. Who knows? Yeah. So I use them to print. And for the actual, so I basically get a bulk shipment to my house. Right. And then I do the packing and shipping myself.
Okay. Cause there's two ways to go, right? You can do that. You can drop ship.
Right. And so the printing shop that I use they don't provide the drop shipping like service. But other places that do, I just found that, you know, essentially they were taking too much of a cut, or they were, I wasn't making as much money, and calendars aren't, super profitable. Like, you're not going to make a ton of money making a calendar.
Probably aren't that great. Yeah.
Yeah, margins are a little low.
Things like printed, other than actual prints, like even books, you'd be surprised at the margins.
Exactly. And that's something I've only learned over just experience is that, you know, I want to sell a $25 calendar. I mean, if I make $10 per calendar, that's a good margin.
That's excellent.
So I found that if I kind of bulk ship them to me, and then I spend the time and the effort and the little bit of money actually, you know, getting the envelopes and, you know, bubble wrap and making sure that everything is like really good to ship. And I spend that kind of effort to do that.
Yeah.
It makes it worth it in the end to make like a couple, make kind of even out like the a little extra money that I might make.
The difference.
Because it's a lot of effort. These photos, a lot of people don't necessarily understand like what goes into a photo, and not talking about technical side or like, you know, buying the camera, but you know, some of these hikes take me, you know, 6-7 hours, and you know, you do have to put sometimes like a little bit of a dollar figure on that.
It's difficult. What's that? It's difficult sometimes for people to monetize or put a number on their effort, if that makes sense, because it's very intangible. Yep. That hike isn't like, how do you price 7 hours of sweat? Right. Very difficult.
And it's not necessarily like I'm going out there for that 7 hours to make a photo to put in a calendar. This is also just me being me. This is like the authentic me doing the thing that I love. And this is the side effect of it. I mean, obviously I love photos and I love great photos, but the mountains is where I find my happy place. And you know, if I get a cool photo and it goes in a calendar and I sell that calendar, you know, that's wonderful and I love it, but that's not the end goal.
Right. And so, I mean, it's also interesting. I'm a firm believer in when you're turning photography into commerce, you're selling more than just the image. Like, you're selling your personality in a sense. You have a personal brand, and people who are buying either your artwork in calendar form, in print form, they're buying a piece of you. And I think that's really important to understand if there's people listening right now who are looking to get into that phase or maybe in that phase and struggling. If you kind of switch your mindset towards that avenue that people are buying me from a strictly from a non-egotistical standpoint, just accept the fact that people are interested in you as a person and get over that imposter syndrome a bit that we've mentioned on this series before, just that your work actually has worth to people. Because some people find that very surprising, which is an interesting psychological characteristic. It's a hurdle, right?
It certainly is a hurdle. And I certainly have, as you mentioned, like you said on other episodes, the imposter syndrome. I mean, I have that to a degree. It's not easy to overcome, but once you do kind of figure that out and understand that people actually want to hear from you, want to know about you, want to actually enjoy the things that you do, whether it's, I've had people that don't hike, want to come along on hikes with me because they want to know what's going through my head at the time. They want to see like that happiness. They don't care about the photo. They just want to know like, this guy loves the mountains and loves hiking. Like, I want to be a part of that. And if they can't be there in the actual physical side of it, then, buying a print through that or a calendar, something like that, is just showing just enough of you where it's like they get a sneak peek behind the curtain, which I think is really cool.
Right. And to add to that, I think it's important to remember that your audience, a lot of them live vicariously through you. A lot of people aren't as privileged as you are to be able to go and do these hikes. There's a lot of people who aren't able-bodied enough to go do these things.
Right.
So it's important to remain grateful for those ideas, but also remember that people are living vicariously through your art. Some people will never get the chance to go see that mountain range, so the photo is the best they can do. And also a little bit on imposter syndrome. There's always that classic idea that just friends and family buying your stuff is, it's just friends and family. They're just doing it. Which is like total bullshit. Nobody's putting a gun to their head, right? But also to overcome imposter syndrome, I think it goes away immediately, at least for me. And for anyone listening struggling with this, maybe adapt this. But it went away for me the moment a stranger bought my print for the price that I thought was fair.
Right.
As soon as that happened, I instantly went, boom, this is what it's worth, because somebody agreed that that's what it's worth. And if this person bought it, somebody else will, and somebody else will, and somebody else will. And then for me, that's when that disappeared, if that makes sense.
It's absolutely true. Oddly enough, I guess timing is everything, but I have actually sold more prints to whether random people or friends and family in the last month than I have in the last 3 years combined.
Wow. What do you attribute that to?
I've been thinking about that a lot lately, and I have no idea. I think I've been pushing it a little bit more. I don't know what the right word is, but I've always never loved just pushing like art or commerce, basically.
Self-promotion, right?
Yeah, I never want to just be like, here, buy my stuff. And I've whether it's maybe the way that I'm doing it, the context in which it's happening, but I just had some random people reach out and say, I want a photo, I want this, what are you selling it for? And it's just like you said, you come up with a price that you think is fair and you think is worth all of your time and effort. And when they say yes, it's like this wave of relief over you, like, wow, this is real.
This is a real. Yeah.
And so I absolutely love it. Obviously I love the feeling of it, but it does make you feel like, you are doing something that people do care about. And it's not just the art that they care about, but it's also you as a person, which is wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, to go further with that, I mean, there's likely tons of photos of that place, but they picked yours.
Mm-hmm.
For a reason, right? And that's where I think the human element comes in. And that's why I think a lot of people who just chuck stuff out into the digital realm don't find the success that they're looking for, because you kind of get what you give.
Yep, I agree.
If that makes sense. But definitely don't I would say don't beat yourself up over family and friends. Every person ever who's been successful in the history of time, their first fans were their family and friends.
And that's yeah, there's no shame in that.
None. So I want to talk a little bit about how adventure and landscape photography plays a role in conservation and what your opinion was on that. Especially with all the tag responsibly movements. I'm kind of a big fan of that. Like, I've gotten more into the habit recently of, especially posting wildlife, tagging the province, or for Americans listening, the state, rather than like exact, even I don't put coordinates and exif data, just because I think the influencer culture is bad big time. Beyond just the social ramifications of it in terms of people's, you know, emotional well-being, but also the destruction it causes. I was wondering what your thoughts were on that, and if you see your photography playing any role in mitigating that as a landscape photographer, and maybe how what you do to just kind of do the no trace thing.
Absolutely. It's funny because I think I used to contribute to the problem a while ago. I wouldn't say I contributed to the problem, but I also, I would use, you know, social media as a way to find cool photos, find places that I didn't know existed.
Right.
And then I started to see how bad that became. There's a pretty famous lake in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's called Hanging Lake.
And this, yeah, keep going.
And among other things, I don't need to get into the nitty gritty details. But among other things, the lake got so it's about a mile and a half hike to the lake. And it was pretty underground for many, many years. They did build a parking lot there, which, you know, it was busy, but not like crazy. But basically they had to restrict access to the lake, not only physically, like you couldn't touch the water, you can't swim in the water, you can't fish in the water. But they actually, in the last year, they closed off the parking area, and you could only take a shuttle in from the town that it's closest to. And you had to pay for that shuttle because the lake and the soil around it was seeing, you know, a lot of use, and it was seeing, whether it was trash in the area or just, you know, stepping on, you know, fragile vegetation. It was just this one fragile lake in this one area was just seeing tons of issues. And it definitely made a, you know, it's as far as that impact goes on that one lake, I totally understand it, but I've been using sort of those same principles on all my other hikes. You know, there are raptor closures, which raptors are certain types of birds, not too familiar with them, but certain hikes have certain animal closures because either they're nesting or they're mating. You know, basically being extremely respectful to the land is something that I've been really, really conscious of. If one side of the lake is, you know, closed off because there's, you know, some sort of restoration going on, you know, don't just trample over the sign that says, you know, closed and just go take a cool photo because it's a cool photo. Because that's ruining it for not only us and for people, you know, that are hiking and taking photos now, but for future generations.
Right.
I have a lot of friends in the ski and snowboard industry. And one thing I've been very, very, conscious of lately is climate change.
Right.
And something that I really want to get, honestly, I'm not too well read in, you know, a lot of climate change, but something I've been really reading into. There's a company called Protect Our Winters. And I have a couple of friends who are, you know, advocates who go to legislature and introduce bills and do all that, which I don't necessarily think that's for me, but I really appreciate. And that, you know, I want to do my part. And my part is just to be a good steward of the land, right?
That's just it. Like, at the bare minimum, just, you know, you don't need to preach on other people. If you're doing the bare minimum, you don't need to do that stuff. You just need to live a wholesome, respectful life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The best that you can. It's really not that hard. I just don't understand the, you know, people who just throw trash out their car.
Right.
It's bananas. Like in Banff and Jasper this year, they had the most garbage of any other year ever in the park.
Wow.
And I could not believe that. I just don't understand that mentality. And I don't really have an answer for it. But to go back to closing, how you mentioned that they were closing trails for birds of prey and raptors so that they could just like not feel the pressure. Yep. I was just in Jasper recently, like I was telling you, and it was kind of a trip that was the most, I was most driven to get images of wildlife just because out there it's like shooting fish.
It's insane.
Saw like 10 moose in one day and bighorn sheep. Those photos are coming, but I'm sitting on them till winter. but I left, it was one of the greatest trips I've ever been on, but I left, I'm a very empathetic person, I like to say, and I left feeling the pressure that those animals deal with, you know, and it just didn't, it didn't sit well with me. Not that I was disrespectful in any sense, but I could just sort of feel how much bullshit these animals have to deal with.
Right.
It just got me thinking of how to be more ethical or instill more ethics around, especially when posting about these animals. Like, I don't think I'm going to post where they were. I mean, obviously moose and bighorn sheep and all this stuff are all over Alberta, but
right.
I think it's a giant problem. And there's actually, I was reading this, there's two pandas in a Japanese zoo a couple months ago. And as I don't know if you know, but like pandas are, it's very difficult to get them to mate. And endangered, they're critically endangered species. So they're trying to get them to mate in captivity so that they can bring them back into the wild. And so these two pandas that have been in captivity in Japan had failed to mate. They weren't doing anything for years and years and years. And then COVID hit, right? COVID hit and they closed down the zoos. So there's no people.
I see where this is going.
And they mated successfully. All they needed was a little damn privacy. You know what I mean? And it's
that's all they needed. My God. To
show the impact that we have, I guess. And the point I'm trying to get across is just be responsible. Don't trample trails. Don't.
Yep.
If you're a big time photographer, I've had people ask me where like fox shots were taken, and there's no way that I'm telling.
Right. Is that's, you know, that's their territory, and you don't want people just,
right,
you know, trampling it up. And then all of a sudden then the fox or whatever animal it's going to be is going to move on, and they're going to need to find a different place to live because they can't have that influence of us just being around all the time.
And that's how it starts, like one person, two people, three people. And then before you know it, a species is endangered. It's just like a snowball effect. But I also think that I do a little bit of everything. You're kind of mostly landscape, but I think I've mentioned this before on this podcast, but we won't get too into it, but we have roles as photographers to showcase these beautiful places in the most enthusiastic and beautiful light that we can, so that it's people viewing are inspired to leave them that way, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's motivation for you as well, but for me, definitely.
It's definitely something I think about when I take the photo. It's definitely tough though, because some of the places I like to go are really remote. And, you know, I do get a lot of people that ask me where they are, and, you know, like you and, you know, where you take your animal photos, like you say, you might just put the general province there. For me, I don't give coordinates. I don't give specific locations. I usually give something general.
Right.
So that could be something as simple as like the town, the nearest, like the closest town.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these mountain ranges are big enough to where, like, if you knew the town it was close by, you wouldn't know where it was.
Right.
But certain specific places that, you know, either I've heard need, you know, I've heard basically need protection more than others, or spots that I really value as, you know, I want to keep, you know, really remote and safe, I do just tag like the state that I live in. There are tons of times I tag either Colorado. I also explore a lot in Utah, which is, you know, a neighboring state to Colorado. And, you know, a lot of these places are just, you can find them if you really tried and if you really knew the area, but it's better just to know what state it's in, because people don't necessarily, it's not that I don't want them there, but there's a level of trust in a lot of people that I just don't have. And I don't love that I don't have that trust.
Yeah, for sure.
But I do feel that without that trust being there, you just can't disclose some of those places, because it becomes, you know, there are certain places in Utah that have recently been just blown up. This one area in this desert, you know, I've seen car commercials shot there in the last year. I've seen some of the biggest photographers in the world promoting photos there. And it's great that they're getting exposure and these lands are getting used. You know, it's you know, BLM land, so it's, you know, it's free for all the people. But when you go there and you see, you know, mounds of dirt, because a lot of these places are fragile, so you see people like using dirt bikes and ATVs where they shouldn't be. Right. You see trash. You see like kind of I said earlier, you know, fragile vegetation that's just stepped on, or just you know there's no care as to where your feet are. It just becomes kind of sad. And I, as much as I want to enjoy these places with other people, there's a responsibility that I do feel, you know, kind of philosophically here, that, you know, I owe it to the world to just kind of keep it to myself and to just kind of do my best to leave it in the same shape that that was there before I got there.
You know? Right. And I mean, and it's such an interesting balance, because we don't want tons of people going and disrespecting that stuff. Like you said, there's not, why would you trust somebody you don't know? But it's also interesting because a lot of people have a change of heart towards all that is being when they see it in person, right?
Right.
So it's kind of interesting, because I've been thinking a lot lately about how to change people's opinions of getting people to care about something is one of the hardest things ever.
Yeah.
About your artwork, or getting them to care about whatever, pick it. It's very difficult. And I think a lot of people need to see this stuff with their own eyes. And a lot of times a photo is the best you can do, or a video, but really bring people there. And even just telling people in conversation about your experience, I think does a lot. So I think it's important that people listening, photographers, share their experiences with those places. Like, oh, I saw this moose and it did this and that. And just like really telling a story, providing that detail, which is a great segue into another point that I have. I want to talk about is how you approach the story component of landscape photography, because some of these mountains have been here for a billion years. They're going to be here for another billion years. They're not moving. So how do you make it interesting and compelling to the viewer? Something that's been photographed thousands and thousands of times. Like for me, I like to add subjects if I can, or like a prop or something interesting, just because, you know, we're all striving for that small level of originality. So how do you go about achieving a successful story component to your landscape, whether it's something you do technically or conceptually?
A lot of it has to do, I think it kind of ties back into the effort side of it. I really do enjoy, I guess the right word would be like a pristine landscape. I do hike, you know, occasionally with friends, and fellow photographers, but a lot of the hiking for me is me time. It's me going out there all by myself, just me and a headlamp. And so part of that story is, you know, the moments leading up to it, whether it's the drive in or the weather. There have been a lot of times where I feel like I've been stalked by wildlife. I'm not a huge wildlife photographer. You know, if an animal just happens to be somewhere, I don't really go striving for them. But if they happen to be there, that's awesome. But there have been plenty of hikes out in Colorado where, you know, I'll be, you know, 3 miles in and just hear like a twig snap and, you know, my heart drops, because I don't know if it's a moose, a black bear. You know, there have been mountain lion issues here lately. And it puts me on edge, right? Like all of a sudden I'm in fully heightened mode. My heart's racing, my adrenaline's going, and I keep going. And it's, you know, I always have in the back of my head, you know, you know, basically just kind of being stealthy about it, being like, okay, I know something's out there, but I'm not going to let it push me down. I'm not going to let it get me. I'm just going to keep going. And you know, that combined with the actual scene itself, you know, like I said earlier, I'm a sunrise person. I pretty much strive to get sunrise photos at wherever I go. And that means, you know, usually hiking 3+ hours in the middle of the night just to get to a spot
right.
that is pristine and perfect for that sun, that like, you know, alpenglow early morning sun. And I think that that's a story all on its own. It's just being there in that moment. Solitude, I think is a huge thing because a lot of the, you know, I hike a lot in Rocky Mountain National Park. It's, I believe, the 4th most visited national park in the country. You know, they see millions and millions of people every year. But those millions of people don't put in that effort to go, you know, like kind of what we talked about earlier, like a mile further. And that's really where I get to that story, right? Like, oh, I'm hiking amongst a group of people that are just, you know, visiting from California. And all of a sudden they get to this first lake, they stop and they turn around. Well, I keep going.
Yeah.
Because I know beyond that lake is something even better. And it might be windy, it might be cold, it might be snowing like crazy. But it's that little bit of extra effort and that solitude, you know, that solidarity that I really, really enjoy. And I think comes across in my photos and in the way that the photos tell a story.
Right. I love that. And I mean, I know that the photography community is, you know, it's very important to work as be collaborative together, right? Like build each other up and stuff like that. But I think what is going to set you apart is going the extra mile. Like we've said, it's never crowded on the extra mile. And I mean, I like to listen to, I'm obviously doing this podcast. I'm really big into like psychology of people and self-awareness and things like that. So I've really liked to listen to Navy SEALs speak because okay. their mentality is freakish. And it's one of those things. I forget. I was listening to one guy speak, and he says in Hell Week when they're doing their training, mm-hmm. SEAL candidates always have the option to ring the bell and quit. And he was saying, I loved hearing that bell because, you know,
just pushed him that much further. I'm sure.
And you know, it made me feel good. I didn't quit and I'm not going to with each bell I hear, like I'm not going to. And that goes with, you know, seeing things through. Like if you're pursuing photography and you feel like you're getting nowhere, it's so easy to ring the bell. And I guess right. the message of our show here would be don't ring the bell.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Photographer Mindset Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on whatever streaming service you're operating off of so that you get notifications when new episodes come out every Friday, just in case you forget. Until next time, guys, go get shooting, go get editing, and stay focused. See you then.